Good afternoon, everyone. It's 2 p.m. on the button. Commissioner Gilman, are you good to go, sir?
I am good to go. Thank you.
Great. Vice Chairman Mitchell, are you ready to go, sir?
I am. Thank you.
All right. Clerk Treasurer Hindle, we're good on our end?
Yes, we are.
Wonderful. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 p.m. sharp, June 20th, 2024. There's a quorum present. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Bringing us to item number two, which is to convene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Bringing us to item number three, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. If you can all stand and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Moving right along to item number four is public comment. Public comment is welcomed at the beginning and end of each meeting. These comments should be limited to matters not on today's calendar agenda. Public comment is again welcomed after each item on the agenda, and those comments should be limited to the agendized topic. Public comment is also limited to 3 minutes per individual. With that said, is there any public comment in the courtroom or on Zoom? For those on Zoom, please use the raise your hand feature. For those calling in, you can use star 9 to raise your hand. I believe star 6 to unmute yourself. Is there any public comment today? Jim, if you don't mind, just give me a holler if somebody's walking up to the podium.
Will do. We're clear here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right, not seeing any public comment, we're going to move to item number five, which is discussion for possible action. Consideration of possible approval of the agenda for June 20, 2024 special meeting. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about today's agenda?
No questions, thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Good, thank you.
County Manager Osborne, are there any modifications to today's agenda?
There are, Mr. Chairman. We would like to ask to move number 7, committee and staff reports, to be immediately before number 22. And then per the DA's office, we would like to continue number 20 and 21. Those are both code updates regarding business or building permits and nuisances to the July 2nd, 2024 County Commission meeting at the courthouse and on Zoom.
All right, so 20 and 21 are gonna be moved, and then item number 7, which are committee and staff reports, they'll be right before public comment, number 22.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda?
Nothing here, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Not seeing any, Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Mitchell. I move to approve today's agenda with the following modifications. We're going to move item number 7 before item 22, and we're going to continue items 20 and 21 to the July 2nd, 2024 meeting of the Board of County Commissioners at the Story County Courthouse in Lexington.
Second your motion.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 6 is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the final canvas of the results of the June 11th, 2024 primary election held in Story County. Clerk Treasurer Hindle.
Second, Mr. Chair. Can you, is everybody seeing the screen, canvas of the vote?
Yes, Jim.
Yes.
Good.
All right. Thank you, commissioners. Want to go through the quick canvas of the vote of the June primary 2024. This will be because of the virtual nature of this, I'm going to present some summary slides from the executive summary report. I have handouts here of this canvas of the vote that includes the abstract approval, the election summary report. It also includes the cast votes report. And then I am also at this time, IT is working to get the election summary report and the cast votes report up on the website. If it's not up now, it will be up before the end of the afternoon so everybody can access the full amount of data from the election. I'm just going to go quick to the next slide, which is summary of our local races of interest from the election summary report. I also want to step back a moment and just say that as I made copies available to the public here and asked IT to put this information up on the website, I also emailed the information to each commissioner. So if you haven't seen that, you do have it available, as well as to our county manager and to the DA's office. So very quickly, our local races started with our Commissioner District 1 race. You see that on this slide, as well as the results for Commissioner District 3. So this is the total vote as calculated and totaled on Monday evening, the 17th, after the 5 p.m. deadline for all cures, that is ballots that had any issue, mail-in ballots primarily, that had any issue to be resolved with a voter contacting the clerk's office. When that deadline passed, we then completed all the final counting of the mail ballots that were received. And this reflects the total of election day, early voting, and mail ballots. And I'll have a summary of that for you in a moment. So you can see the results for Commissioner District 1, Commissioner District 3. Moving on, our school board trustee seats were all uncontested. So those are elections that are now finalized. If I step back a moment, forgive me for not reading my notes clearly. In the Commissioner District 1 race, the winner of that race goes through to the general, and we will also have a Democrat challenger in the general. In the Commissioner District 3 race, that is an election where that winning individual will go through to the general but will be unopposed. In the school board trustee races, all of those are now final and they are elected. The Justice of the Peace race, similarly, since there was no contest, no challenger, as a nonpartisan race, the judge got over 50% of the vote, and therefore that race is final as well. Before I move on to the summary, are there any questions just on these basic results for our county races?
No questions for me, Jim.
I don't see any hands up. I'm going to move on to the next slide. This is the, again, election summary report giving a detailed look at the elections turnout by party and by election day, early vote, and mail-in. We had total eligible voters, active voters to participate in this election of 3,873. Of which 1,256 cast a vote, and therefore we had a turnout of 32.43%. I'm going to put that in a little bit of a perspective. As we look at the overall turnout, again, those totals that I just went through with the total turnout for this primary election of 32.43%, that is a significantly lower result than we've had for previous primaries. As you can see, primaries have all been running somewhere between 40 to 50%. And the 32% from the data that we have is a low that we haven't seen previously, at least within the scope that I've looked. But I'm going to call the modern age of our primaries or our elections being since 2020, given that that's when we instituted the mail ballot going to all active voters. And so we can see that in general, we have a downward trend on turnout. I do not expect that to hold as we go to the general election this year. As we know, there is much interest and much emotion around that. So I would expect our general to be up in our typical 80 percentile turnout at this time. I'm going to now go to just looking at primary election voting trends. We've talked about this in our previous canvases. I used 2018 as kind of a benchmark of prior to mail-in ballots. We had a significant percentage of our electorate turnout for election day, and then the smaller amount was early voting. As we look forward in some of the consistent with some of the discussion that we have had in previous election turnouts, what we're seeing is that the mail ballots, while impacting election day, they are significantly impacting the turnout of our early voting. And I would say in this election, the primary early voting, 2 weeks of early voting, it was very slow in our polling center here at the Slammer and even out at Lockwood during early voting. And as you can see, that's because a significant amount of ballots came in through the mail. And then once again, as a county, we tend to show up on election day, even though it's a little smaller than what we've had traditionally prior to 2020 and in the 22 primary, but it's still fairly strong. The PPP is a bad, I put it in there, but it's not really something, it's a little bit of an anomaly, as we know, given all the controversy and the dynamics around that election. I really think we ought to compare these primary elections to themselves to get a better trend line. Any questions on our turnout or our voting trends?
No questions for me, Jim.
I have just one.
Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering if the trends continue along this line, Jim, do you see potential changes in the allocation of resources between early voting and mail ballots and those kind of things? Or do you think that you anticipate holding kind of the same pattern as far as early voting availability?
If we continue to see this, we have had this discussion with the Secretary of State and among the clerks across the state, because our trend and our experience in this primary and really the trend lines that we are starting to show here across the elections are not unique. Across the state, it was low turnout. Across the state, early voting was very slow in polling centers across the counties. And so we have discussed the fact that if we continue to see that mail votes cannibalize early voting, we'd have to go to the legislature and get the NRS change to shorten the early voting weeks. Right now it's 2 weeks for the primary and the general. And if we continue to see this, we may go to them and say that there needs to be a modification in the law that would reduce early voting to 1 week. But there's nothing that we can do by edict or the Secretary of State can do directly shortening that. It would have to be legislative.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Not. Chairman, you have one or move on?
Nope. I'm good, Jim. Thank you.
Okay. That's the data, the stats as I've got it so far today. In general, as we talked, and as we know, a primary is a closed primary in the state of Nevada, which means that people had to vote by party for the slate of candidates or the races that would be representative of their affiliation. As you go through and as people look at the data in its total, remember that not every voter does not have to vote in every race. So you may have some races that would have a total cast vote number smaller than the total number of voters of that party voting in the election. The other aspect of it is that as we saw in mail balloting, we mail out a ballot to every active registered voter. And so we are actively looking at our mailing trends in terms of how many ballots we mail out, how many ballots we get back undeliverable. And we are moving forward to try and use that in our activities. And this is an activity in all counties across the state going forward, where we will be working to try and reduce that undeliverable percentage by reaching out, contacting voters, and working through the statute, the NRS statute, as well as the federal statute, the Help America Vote Act, and working within the law to move people from active to inactive, or to cancel them if they are able to respond back to us that they no longer live in the county. With this particular election, we had no issues. We had no irregularities. There are no specific items to point out within the results that would be of any concern. It was a good election. It was a clear election. And congratulations to the candidates that are moving forward. As I said, one of the key things also is that we have same-day voter registration. Across the state, we see mixed results as to how many people are showing up and voting same day as a new registrant. Within this county, in this election, we had 7 new same-day voter registrants that are reflected in these totals. All of them were able to be cleared and counted. We also had 26 voters that showed up to the polling places and updated their voter registration, primarily by changing party affiliation, doing an update to their party affiliation. But we did have a couple that were signature updates as well. But in general, to the total result, those are small numbers. We will be going forward with voter roll management. As I said, we had effectively, we sent out 3,800 plus mail ballots, not sending some to, you know, we have opt out people that do have told us that they do not want a mail ballot. So we take them off the mailing list, but we still send out roughly 3,800 ballots. We had 259 ballots returned to us as undeliverable. As a follow-up to this election, we will be sending out a voter contact card and asking voters to either update registration, confirm to us through an affidavit that they've moved out of state, or if they do not respond back, there is no response back, then that provides us by the statute the ability to move them from active to inactive. And that will be going on. Right now, we are working on the mailing, and that will be happening the first week of July. At this point, I leave it to the commissioners for any further questions. I ask you to consider the proposal to approve the canvas and allow me to send on our data to the Secretary of State at the close of the meeting today.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that very informational update. I want to say thanks to you, Mark, and your staff, including the volunteers, who I think were really instrumental in a seamless election in Story County. I know it took a lot of time and effort on everybody's part, so I just wanted to make sure that a thank you was out there, especially to the volunteers who are doing it out of their kindness of their heart and for the love of the process. So thank you for that. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments at this time, sir?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman?
I just had one last question. Mr. Hindle, when we send mail ballots, those go only to active voters, or those go to everyone who's registered?
Correct. Only to active voters.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for the hard work to you and Mark and to all the poll workers. And appreciate the, making sure that we got it done and got it done well.
Just following up, Mr. Chair, if I may, on your last comment, I was very thankful for the poll workers we have. As you emphasized, our poll workers across the county and our 4 polling centers are what make this work. Without them, we would not have the integrity in the system, as well as just being able to hold this so that people can have a convenient way of voting in each of our communities. I also want to thank the ballot board. We have a ballot board that convenes on election night, as well as on the final night when we go past that date for ballot cures. So this last Monday night, we have a bipartisan group of 5 people that meet to process all the mail ballots, and they are critical in this as well. And I thank them. And we have so many cooperating departments. This really is a team effort, not only with our volunteers and our poll workers, but across the county, Sheriff's Department, Senior Center, Fire Protection District, the administrative office getting us vehicles. I really appreciate everybody's support in this critical activity that we have for the county. And last, my staff, it is a team effort. Everybody pitches in. Mark Allen, this being his first time around through a full election cycle, did a great job. He really was the manager of this activity. And I think he's not here today for an appointment that he had scheduled before the meeting was moved. But I don't think we've worn him out too much, although he does need at least a weekend to recuperate after all of this. But thank you to all those people who make this make it for us able to do this. And from here, we're on to November. Stay tuned.
Thank you, Jim. He knows that he's working for Story County, right? No vacation, 7 days a week.
I try and emphasize that.
I'm sure the DA's office loves to hear that. Anyway, is there any public comment? All right, not seeing any. Vice Chairman. Thank you, Jim. Sorry. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the final canvass of the June 11th, 2024 primary election held in and for Story County, and that the county clerk make a copy of the abstract and make a mechanical report of the abstract to the Secretary of State.
I'll second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Moving on to item number 8 is board comments. Commissioner Gilman, do you want to kick things off? Anything for us today?
I don't have anything to add today. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, sir. Vice Chairman?
I have no specific board comments. Thank you.
All right. And I don't have anything today either. That'll bring us to item number 9, which is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 24-733, establishing a special revenue fund known as Extraordinary Repairs and Maintenance Fund within Story County. I believe our comptroller is going to take this.
Yes. Good morning. This is Jennifer for the record. For some reason, it's telling me my camera is blocked, so you don't get to see my face today. This has come about. We do have a capital projects fund that normally encompasses all of our new projects and all of our large repair projects. However, looking forward into the future with seeing our extensive CIP, it has come to the realization that it would be a great idea for the county to separate new projects, brand new projects, and repairs and maintenance projects. This helps us out with our planning, separating out these items within the CIP and being able to account for certain kinds of projects more streamlined. The reason that this is extraordinary repairs and maintenance is because, as the NRS states, anything that we utilize these capital funds for have to be large projects that come about no sooner than 5 years apart. These would be things like a new roof, not repairing a roof, a new overhaul HVAC system, not coming in and fixing the air conditioner just because it's not working. Elevator modernization is another one. One item that I think we could have utilized this fund for was in the last year or two, we had some significantly large elevator repairs and maintenance bills. That those repairs and maintenance items come across every 10 years. And those of us that were not involved in that 10 years ago had no idea. And these were in excess of $10,000 and kind of blew our elevator maintenance line item account. So that's what will help with our overall budget is just being able to have some general money available when those things do come about. I plan on funding this fund initially with $1 million that will come from the general fund unanticipated revenue and a portion of the general fund ending fund balance. There'll be little activity, if any, in the coming year because we are doing this too late. There is no budget for this, but being able to do this at the tail end of this year, we're able to clean up some loose ends with some fund balance and unanticipated revenue. That's all I have. If you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, any questions or comments for Jennifer?
I have no questions. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell.
No, good. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item?
We have one, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Hugh Gallagher. I have all three of these special revenue applications kind of give me great pause. We are taking things out of the original, you're taking things out of the original budget process, and you're dumping them into special revenue funds. And thereby, I think, maybe failing a little bit on what the intention is. We've got equipment acquisition, special revenue fund capital projects. We've got the departmental budget. We've got contingency and we've got augmentations. Anything that can happen, whether it's with the elevator or the roof or whatever, can be budgeted because those department heads clearly understand the maintenance on an upkeep of those. And I don't think that this is necessary. Additionally, in the agenda action report, it says once allocated to the compensated absence fund, which I think is a typo. Again, I would like these items to fall under departmental discretion. Therefore, it gives everybody a real checks and balance as to where the money is going. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your comments. Comptroller McCain, did you have an answer for that? My understanding was that these were for emergency situations. Did I understand you correctly?
These are not necessarily for emergency situations. They can be for planned situations as well. And these are not any items that would come under a departmental budget. These are items that would currently come out of the capital projects fund, which I prefer to use that capital projects fund for new projects. For example, in the coming year, we have a new Lockwood Senior Center that is in excess of $5 million. We have Station 71, which is also going to be in excess of $5 million. And I feel like being able to separate out our major repairs and maintenance items and putting them in their own fund, it would make it easier to track, more streamlined for our department heads, and make this information clearer and more transparent to our taxpayers.
Thank you, Comptroller. I think at the end of the day, that's at least my objective is to be as transparent as possible with taxpayer dollars. I believe that this is the proper path. So I appreciate the explanation. As do I appreciate the public comment. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any? I've already asked that. I apologize. Is there any other public comment? I don't believe I see any. Commissioner Gilman, did you have any additional questions after Jennifer's additional explanation there?
No additional questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Vice Chairman?
I do have one quick question, and you may have already covered this, Jennifer. I just want to make sure I understand the process or the procedure as far as getting money into this fund and out of this fund. There's no specific dedicated revenue for this fund, but that would be part of our budgeting process. I just can you just quickly review kind of what the parameters are around working into and out of a new special revenue fund?
So our process to fund this fund right now would be to watch our unanticipated revenues. So for example, if we have higher than anticipated ad valorem, I can move that money into this fund. As well, we have a high general fund balance, and it is within the realm to move fund balances between funds as necessary. We do this every budget cycle when we have to, for example, fund the capital projects fund. We move general fund appropriations through the commissioner's departmental budget. At this time, I would move those funds between fund balance and fund balance, so it would not be a budgeted item.
Okay. Thank you. And then I'm assuming that our capital improvement plan would reflect or bifurcate what's coming out of what continues to come out of the capital projects fund and what would then be assigned to this fund. Is that what we're anticipating?
That's exactly how we would be reworking the capital projects, the capital improvement plan. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. Not seeing any other questions, would you care to entertain a motion at this time?
I'd be happy to do that. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve Resolution 24-733, establishing a special revenue fund known as the Extraordinary Repairs and Maintenance Fund within Story County with a beginning fund balance of $1 million.
I'll second the motion.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 10, this is discussion for possible action, consideration and possible approval of resolution number 24-734, setting the tax rate levy at 3.4607% for fiscal year 24 through 25. Comptroller McCain.
Hello again, Jennifer McCain for the record. The tax rate is approved back in February. Doing this in the last meeting of June sets the actual tax rate so that the assessor's office can proceed with the property tax bills and the clerk treasurer's office can be collecting our revenues for the new year. So with your approval, you'll approve resolution 24-734, and that will set our tax rate. In February, it was approved to have no changes, and the tax rate is remaining at 3.4607. The breakdown of this tax rate is on the resolution.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, any questions or comments?
Well, the only comment is I am very much appreciate our approach here in Story County. I don't believe we've had a tax setting increase in the approximate 12 years that I have been a commissioner here in Story County. And I celebrate our fiscal responsibility and our approach. And I thank you for keeping all of our tax rate very balanced and secure for everybody in the county.
Couldn't agree more, Commissioner Gilman. Vice Chairman Mitchell, any questions or comments?
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item?
Here, Mr. Chair.
All right, not seeing any in the courtroom or on Zoom. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 24-734, setting the tax rate levy at 3.4607 for fiscal year 2024-2025.
I'll second the motion.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. On to item number 11. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 24-735 to transfer various funds within the Story County 23-24 budget pursuant to NRS 354.59800. The total amount of transfers is $1,548,000 with a net adjustment of $0 in the overall budget. Comptroller McCain.
Jennifer McCain, comptroller, for the record again. Before I get started, I need to let you know that there was an additional resolution that was put online and sent to each of the commissioners, as well as an amended motion. So I want to be sure that everyone has received that.
No, I did receive it.
Okay. I'm really happy with our transfers. We have no augments this year. As Commissioner stated, the total is $1.548 million. $600,000 of this transfer is actually for Public Works Vector truck that was supposed to come last year. It didn't arrive before June 30th, and we did not update the budget to include it in the current year's budget. And actually, most of this year, we thought it wasn't going to come until next year. So you can see a silver lining there. We received a piece of equipment that we didn't have to wait 2.5 years for. We only waited just under 2 years. So we had to transfer some money between capital projects and equipment acquisition to make sure that that money was available to purchase that truck once it arrived. That is your new resolution 24-738. The resolution, nope. Yes, no, 20, the one that is on your agenda, 24-735. That will approve this $600,000 transfer. The other resolution is the new one that I sent out, 24-738. This is transferring appropriations between our contingency account into our special revenue funds. We would like to transfer $200,000 to emergency mitigation. This is to make ourselves whole for the storm we had in 22-23 that led to FEMA coming in and helping us out with some major projects. However, we still have to have the budget to pay for those projects. We would like to transfer $150,000 from contingency into equipment acquisition. This is due to the new Tesla agreement where they are supporting us to purchase 7 new sheriff vehicles for 7 new deputies that we are hiring within that agreement. Tesla is reimbursing us for these vehicles. However, we have to have the budget to be able to spend the money. The next one is $2,000 into genetic marker testing. This is directly due to higher revenue, and this is one of those in and out accounts. The money comes in and we have to spend it. We did not estimate the amount of genetic marker testing or forensics that we were going to need this year. So that's what that one is for. Indigent accident, we need to transfer $105,000. This also has some silver lining. This is directly related to higher than anticipated ad valorem, which means our payments back to the state for indigent accident payments. That made that one higher. We need to increase the tri-payback account, $170,000. This again is directly related to more revenues that we had in fiscal year 2022. We knew that this was going to be a transfer back in September when the higher than anticipated payment was approved. And then finally, in our grant fund, we need to transfer $100,000 because we had an unexpected grant opportunity. That totals $727,000 for that resolution. Then we have, that requires no resolution, I have transfers between, within a department, but between their objects. Objects are wages, then benefits, service and supplies, and capital, and that's how all of our account numbers are grouped together. So we had a couple of, we have a few transfers that are directly related to the commissioner's approval of the very generous extra step increase that they gave all county employees back in December. we were able to cover most of them, but the recorders, the recorders had a shortfall in their PERS account due to this slightly higher increase in wages. So we are transferring $1,000 from their travel account in service and supplies into their PERS account, which falls under benefits. In the administrative or HR department, we anticipated needing some extra funds in wages and benefits, specifically PERS, due to some changes within that department. And again, the BOCC increase in wages, we are transferring $23,000 from their professional service account into wages at $18,000 and PERS at $5,000. The sheriff's office had an opportunity to add a few extra capital outlay items, whether it was a fingerprint reader and an evidence trailer. So they are transferring out of their benefits $10,000 into capital outlay, the same $10,000. Community development, we budgeted for a printer in March of the prior year. And that printer, when they came to buy it during the current fiscal year, was $500 more than we had budgeted. So we are transferring $500 out of their tire account into their computers capital outlay account. IT was in need of $10,000 to make their wages whole, and we are taking that out of IT's capital outlay budget. The comptroller's department had some overtime that we don't usually have. This is a direct result of setting up ExecuTime, and for a small period, approximately 3 to 4 payrolls, we were doing double payroll to make sure everything was processing correctly. So we are transferring $1,000 out of our professional services into that overtime account. And emergency management actually had, for the first approximately 2 months of the year, had 2 emergency management directors. So we knew that this transfer was going to be necessary. We are taking $27,000 from their professional service account and putting $10,000 into wages and $17,000 into benefits. It will be split between PERS and health insurance. And then we had a few transfers that were between departments, which again, those do not result or is not necessary for a resolution. All is within the general fund. We senior center has some deficit in wages and benefits. This is directly related to moving the health and human officer to senior center and out of community relations. So we are directly transferring $30,000 in wages, $17,000 in PERS, and $15,500 in health insurance from our community relations department to our senior center department. And I apologize, I'm using their old names. Then planning department had an excess in professional services, and we had some needs in 3 other departments that we are going to transfer out of planning's professional services. The assessor had a specialized Tesla audit. So we are taking $60,000 from planning professional services to the assessor's professional services. We are taking $6,000 for wages and $3,000 for PERS into justice court. And then we had a calculation error on our payroll spreadsheet with pool benefits, and they were in need of $17,000 split between PACT, Social Security, and PERS. And that is also coming from planning professional services. So that one was a total of $148,500. I have to say that I am extremely pleased with these transfers. Without that $600,000 for the Vector truck, we would have been under $1 million. I can't remember when that has ever happened before. I have to give kudos to all the department heads for really paying attention to their budgets, for having open communication with my office. For the county manager Osborne and I really diligently looking at our budget requests and making sure that money was available. I like to say that when a department head wanted something that was outside of the budget, we tended to play let's make a deal, and it worked out really well. So again, I just want to thank everybody. This was, I feel like, a great way to end our year, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Comptroller McCain, Chairman, if you don't mind. Austin, sure. For the record, can you please just confirm what we're looking at here as far as that tri-payback? This does not actually affect the tri-payback or the amount of money that would go back to Tri-Center for this period. This is just fixing and balancing out the funds. Can you just confirm that? Thank you.
Yes, this is fixing that fund. Back in September, I had approached the board that the audit had a payment due to Tri-Properties that was approximately $170,000 higher than what I had anticipated. So that is the reason for this transfer. There's the payment, again, was made in September. Does that answer your question?
It does. Me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Comptroller.
No problem. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments?
I have a comment. I'm going to disclose that I do have a pecuniary interest in the TRI entity that is a part and parcel. But in as much as this is not actually the payment issue, but the moving of the funds, I believe that I am in a position to vote on this particular issue, but with the disclosure on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Vice Chairman, do you have any questions or comments?
I don't have any questions on the item. I do have just a procedural question as far as the motion goes, and do we, is it sufficient, I guess, and maybe this is a question for legal, is it sufficient enough just to by reference include the resolutions, or do I need to make a motion specifically to approve each of the resolutions as part of this item?
Thank you, Commissioner. You should move to approve each of the resolutions that were mentioned, not incorporate by reference.
Very good.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. Is there any public comment?
Yes, sir. Public comment here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Hugh Gallagher for the record. I have a question on the $170,000 tri payback. My question is to Jennifer, are we still taking appropriations out of the general capital acquisition and fire protection district?
We are only taking funds out of the general and the equipment acquisition, and we move, please hold a second. Several years ago, we had moved a portion of the BCCRTs and the SCCRTs directly, as the clerk treasurer's office does the apportionment. BCCRTs is at 50% of 5% of what's collected, and the SCCRTs is at 10% of what's collected. So that's currently how that's funded. And I can tell you that to answer a little part of Austin's question, we had budgeted $3.5 million as the payment, and the payment came out to be $3.66 million. So that's where the $170,000 came from.
Originally, it was for those funds who received property taxes from the industrial park.
Correct.
The fire department receives property taxes from the industrial park. So I don't get the SECRT or the CCRT stuff. They should be part of the Tribeca.
I don't understand your question, sir.
Well, the question is, originally, when we did the tri-payback fund, it was a combination based upon a prorated formula between the general capital acquisition and the fire protection district. This lasted, at least as that I could tell, until 2020. Why? What made the difference that the fire department does not pay taxes on property taxes they receive from the industrial park?
This was something that was brought up several years ago, and maybe Austin can speak to more of this. Sorry, I don't mean to throw you under the bus, but it was brought to our attention that the fire district was never officially involved in this tri-payback agreement and therefore had no financial responsibility to pay into this fund or pay back to try. And the SCCRTs and the BCCRTs are included in the revenue calculations for the money that is attributed to TRI.
I don't get it, because since this was adopted in 2009, it has always been that way until probably 2020. That's a departure of a very simple formula for the payback of the tri-fund. I don't see why the fire department, although they receive property taxes, real estate property taxes from the industrial park, why they shouldn't be able to pay a portion of that based upon a formula.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know in the past, Austin Osborne, for the record, I think this is something during public comment. If you would like, we would be happy to talk with Mr. Gallagher about this. We've been advised on how the tri-payback is. Hold on here. That's our timer for the time. Hold on. Stop. We'll go ahead and talk to Mr. Gallagher and be able to explain to him the advice we've been given on how the tri-payback is to be handled between the county and the fire district, as you wish. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I would like to add that, excuse me, Chairman, that the tri-auditor and the decision makers with tri were fully on board with this decision. It wasn't something that we did on our own. In fact, the auditor went back and amended several of the audits.
Noted. So what I'd like to say at this point, if Vice Chairman Mitchell and Commissioner Gilman don't have any issues moving forward with the motion, I believe the comptroller and the county manager are happy to take this discussion at a later time. So Mr. Gallagher, if you do want to continue that discussion, I'd urge you to reach out to the comptroller and the county manager, and I believe they'll be able to get you the answers that you need. So Commissioner Gilman, I assume you don't have any questions regarding what was brought up?
No questions. Thank you, sir.
All right, Vice Chairman.
I don't have any questions. Do I understand that specifically in this case, the move that we're making is out of contingency? And I realize that may originate somewhere else, but in this point, it's out of contingency into these other specific funds.
Yes, specifically for the tri-payback. Let me see. The tri-payback fund grants indigent accident, genetic marker, equipment acquisition, and emergency mitigation are all coming out of contingency.
Okay, great. And is that something that was previewed? Are we going to have to look at refilling contingency, so to speak? Are we going to be okay with this much coming out of our contingency fund?
Contingency is not a fund. It's a line item account within the general fund, and it is rebudgeted every year at approximately 3% of our expenses.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm comfortable going ahead with the motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Is there any other public comment, be it in the courtroom or on Zoom?
Sure.
All right. I assume that means we don't have any more public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
I'm going to do my best here. Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the transfers between the 2023-2024 Story County budget in the amount of $1.548 million in the total between general fund departments, funds, and contingency with a net adjustment to the county budget of $0. I further move to approve resolution number 24-735, transferring $600,000 from capital projects to equipment acquisition, and to approve resolution number 24-738, transferring $727,000 from the general fund contingency to the other Story County special revenue funds.
I'll second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 12. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 24-736, establishing a special revenue fund known as the Risk Management Fund within Story County. Comptroller McCain.
Hello again, Jennifer McCain for the record. This is another additional fund, the Risk Management Fund. This came about as a recommendation as all three of these new funds came from Alan Cult with Pool Pact. The county commissioners recently approved increasing our liability insurance deductible from $5,000 to $25,000. So this will allow us to create a fund that would pay for and absorb those larger deductibles as they come up and would not, for example, bust open a department's budget if they happen to have two car accidents in one fiscal year. So the primary purpose of this is to, again, absorb those costs that are associated with liability insurance claims. This fund can also be utilized for other risk management services and programs. And I am anticipating or recommending that we begin this fund with an initial $250,000, which is equivalent to 10 insurance claims. And this is our average over the past 10 years. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you, Comptroller. Commissioner Gilman, questions or comments at this time?
No questions. Thank you, sir.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item?
I'm sorry, members of the commission. This happens to be a banner day for some reason or another. Hugh Gallagher for the record. I understand on the equipment side of this. Am I clear or not clear in understanding that this can be used for employee cases of liability with regards to a department head?
I believe that it can, yes. But the initial reasoning for opening this is to absorb those $25,000 insurance deductibles.
So, in other words, department heads will no longer be required to absorb their poor decisions regarding employees. We have always, or usually have always, done this. As a matter of fact, our sheriff's department is my earliest deal that resulted in a claim and it went against his budget. It also got put in the financial statements. And I think it's a good deterrent that keeps our department heads in line. If this happens, instead, they can do whatever they want and this fund's going to take care of it. I don't see the reasoning. I understand on the equipment side, but I don't understand on the employee side. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you care to make a motion?
I will. I just have one more question. Comptroller McCain, if just because we create this fund, does that automatically cover the type of thing that Mr. Gallagher is referencing? Or is that something that would have to be specifically approved or some other operation that applies, that would apply these funds to a situation like that where there was something done that created a liability on the part of a department?
Thank you for asking that, Commissioner Mitchell. As I stated, this is originally created to absorb the deductibles of $25,000. I think each case-by-case situation would have to be examined and the best possible fund and or department that would have to absorb that liability and the payouts would have to be determined case by case.
Gotcha. And so do we have a policy or some other mechanism that would bump that from just a kind of routine decision to board action, or just trying to understand what the implication may be there?
I think that it might be necessary, if the board so wishes, is to create a further policy on how to handle department head versus employee or interdepartment personnel insurance claims.
And Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Mitchell, Austin Osborne for the record, I do want to add as well, this board's aware that we are in the process of drafting policies dealing with purchasing and the limits that would be going to the board in purchasing versus those that would be authorized over a counter or in an office. We're near the end of that policy draft, and we're going to bring that to this board for consideration very shortly. And I think that policy will help better define than what we have right now what happens beyond $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, even $100,000. For the county and all of its departments, as well as addressing matters like this clearly and in writing. And this board and the public will also have a chance to take a look at that and comment. But I wanted to bring your attention that the comptroller's office, my office, HR, and the DA's office are all looking at that right now and getting pretty close to its completion. Thank you.
Very good. I appreciate Mr. Gallagher bringing it up. I think it's worthwhile. I do see the differentiation between the issues that we do know about, which is we've created a larger deductible need, and then the issues that may happen or we don't know. And I think that it would be prudent for us to work on some policies to guide us if and when, as I imagine they will come up, So that we're not shooting from the hip on that.
And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Mitchell, if I may, Austin Osborne for the record, I'm glad you brought that up, Commissioner. We have had a $5,000 deductible with pool for quite some time. So this is a little bit new territory, as now the board has taken action to raise the deductible to $25,000. So we're hustling a bit right now to get that addressed in addition to the policies. Sometimes there might be some confidentiality if it was a labor case that we would be able to bring something to the board and handle it in that manner. In other cases, it would not be the case to be able to avail at all. But we would bring something to the board at this point with a $25,000 expenditure, I believe, when we run into that. But this is a little bit new territory, and we're working very quickly to get this resolved in policy so it's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I'll call one more time for any public comment. Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, are you comfortable with the motion?
Yeah, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve Resolution 24-736, establishing a special revenue fund known as the Risk Management Fund within Story County with a beginning fund balance of $250,000.
I'll second the motion.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 13, this is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 24-737, establishing a special revenue fund known as Compensated Absence Fund within Story County. Comptroller McCain.
Hello, Jennifer McCain for the record again. This is, again, another new fund that in my talking with Alan Colt at Pool Pact regarding the risk management, he asked if we had a compensated absent fund. Our discussion got into, well, then you have an unfunded liability. Last fiscal year in our audit, this compensated absent was reported on our books as $937,123. So we have that liability on our books and had no plan to pay for that. That is the purpose of this fund. This fund will absorb the costs of leave payouts when employees leave their employment with the county. To put this in perspective, a mid-level employee that had a full bank of annual and sick leave could cause any one of our departments approximately $15,000 on their way out the door. A higher level employee, this could be upwards of $25,000 to $30,000. So with knowing we can't always plan when employees are retiring or moving on with their lives, this gives us an avenue to be able to pay for those balances outside of the departmental level. We would like to begin this new fund with $400,000, which again will come from general fund unanticipated revenue and general fund balance. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments at this time?
No questions. Thank you.
Vice Chairman?
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Hugh Gallagher, for the record. This takes it out of departmental hands. We're in the budget process. You can always budget this anticipated things. I have no idea. I mean, we've done this before. Alan Galt was from Fallon. I understand that. They have quite a bit bigger budget than we do. But I don't understand why. The first thing on the agenda action report was that these funds cannot be transferred back to the general fund or any other special fund. This is not in accordance with NRS 354-6105, as with the extraordinary maintenance. I would like to get that stricken. But finally, I'm not sure, you know, the final leave payouts or individual departments or individual employees, is this where due to the anticipation of the during the 24-25 budget of us going an additional 43 people from 2023, of which 10 are in welfare, 18 in general government, and 10 in public works, when our population only increased 95 people? I don't really understand it, Mr. Chairman. Maybe they can shed some light. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment today? All right. Not seeing any. I do just want to make one statement. Our population has increased by just under 100 people. I would like to point out, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's very important that our staff, those who are listening, understand that the workload has increased for us, not because of our population, but because of the amount of business that's been going on throughout the county. And obviously people's needs have changed. So with that, I would like to thank our staff for all the hard work that they do. You know, I, for one, have always pushed for more employees to help get the job done. And I just would like to let them know that their efforts are greatly appreciated. Keep up the great work. So with that said, is there any other public comment?
I have one public comment, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Austin Osborne for the record. Just a general comment about the Comptroller's Office. As you see in some of the actions today, as well as during the budget process, Jennifer's office, or Comptroller McCain, takes an abundance of caution in the risk management area and looks at areas that just bolster things in case of any scenario that may happen, especially when there's no expenditures doing such. So I'm in support of what she's doing and want to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Not seeing any other public comment. If there is, please jump up now. Otherwise, Vice Chairman, are you care to make a motion?
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve Resolution 24-737, establishing a special revenue fund known as the Compensated Absence Fund within Story County with a beginning fund balance of $400,000.
Second the motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. On to item number 14. This is to recess to convene as the Story County Water and Sewer Board, bringing us to item number 15, which is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the transfer in the water fund within the Story County 23-24 budget, pursuant to NRS 354.59800. These transfers total $16,000 and have a net adjustment of $0. Comptroller McCain.
Good afternoon, Jennifer McCain for the record. You need to know that we're almost done with the Jennifer show. The water fund, we have the need to transfer $16,000, which breaks down into $8,550 into wages, $4,450 into overtime, and $3,000 into PERS. This has to do with not only the commissioner's increase in December, but also some changes in their employees and how the workings of the water fund go. We are transferring this money out of another water fund account number, which would be professional services. And there are no transfers or augments in the sewer fund. Again, I would like to give really big appreciation to Jason and his team. As we all know, the water and the sewer funds always run pretty tight, and they worked diligently to make sure that this budget worked and these wages and benefits transfers are should no way diminish what we have all done to make sure that these budgets stayed within budget. And with that, I would answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for the comptroller at this time?
Just a major thank you, Ms. Jennifer, for all of the work, the effort, the knowledge that you bring to the table, the responsibility that you carry, and the way and the actions that you, in a superior manner, represent our Story County. And I am grateful that you're there in the chair, and I applaud your performance on all of our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Indeed. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you have anything?
I don't. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the transfers in the 2023-2024 Story County water budget in the amount of $16,000 with a net adjustment to the water budget of $0.
Second the motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Jennifer. On to item number 16 is the adjourn to reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners, bringing us to item number 17, which I know somebody is excited to hear. This is discussion for possible action. Special use permit 2024-020. Kathy, I hate to steal this from you. You want to kick this thing off?
Do I need to read the whole request, or is everybody, are we okay with how this is?
Whatever the DA says we're good with.
Well, I'll just start and then he'll correct me if I'm doing something wrong. So this is an application for a special use permit for the Delta Saloon property. Right now, you're allowed to have up to 15 or less gaming units on the site, as long as it's a sex accessory to a bar, a restaurant, or a retail establishment. To have over 15 machines or gaming units, it does need the special use permit. This site had previously had that in the past, but it hadn't been operating for more than 24 consecutive months. So we had to start over with the special use permit. So this is for the land use only. This was heard at our June 6th Planning Commission meeting, and they had expressed their support of this property being reopened, and they had voted unanimously 7-0 to recommend approval of the project. Staff is also recommending approval. We had sent out public notices for this, and we didn't receive any public comment on this, and there was nobody that showed up to speak about this at the Planning Commission meeting.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kathy. I'm looking at you, Brian. In the future?
No, I think she's good. She'll just have to, when you're at that ready for that point, you'll need to read the findings of fact into the record.
Yep. I have made 4 notes for myself. I figure after a couple years, I should know. But I like to keep everybody on their toes. All right. So, Commissioner Gilman, any questions or comments at this time?
Just a comment that I'm very, very happy to see it coming, and it's about time. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I just had a question about is this kind of an on and off switch? In other words, we're opening up to the usage of above 15, or is there a specific number that is of gaming units that's identified within this permit?
For this special use permit, this is not limiting the number. They may have that through their gaming license or their business licensing, but that's not something. We're just looking at this property and if this property can have more than 15 units.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item?
Nothing here, sir.
All right. Thank you. Before I ask Kathy to read the findings, I just want to make note that I've seen the progress going on at the Delta. It's just short of a miracle as far as what they're getting done in a limited amount of time. So, Mr. Grimes, I truly appreciate you and your team getting to work on this right away. It's wonderful to see that building coming back to life again so quickly. With that, Kathy, would you care to read the findings?
Sure. For the motion for approval, this approval is to operate a gaming establishment within an existing structure located at the southwest corner of Union Street and C Street. The property contains several storefronts, all internally connected in the downtown district of Virginia City. This request is to allow for gaming to occur throughout the retail establishment and will include but isn't limited to slot machines and table games. The property is located at 2 South C Street and 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number APN 001-083-1112-13-14. The proposed project complies with the general purpose, goals, objectives, and standards of the county master plan, this title, and any other plan, program, map, or ordinance adopted or under consideration pursuant to official notice by the county. The proposal, location, size, height, operations, and other significant features will be compatible with and will not cause substantial negative impact on adjacent land uses, or will perform a function or provide a service that is essential to the surrounding land uses, community, and neighborhood. The proposed project will result in no substantial or undue adverse effect on adjacent property, the character of the neighborhood, traffic conditions, parking, public improvements, public sites or right-of-way, or other matters affecting the public health, safety, and general welfare, either as they now exist or as they may in the future be developed as a result of the implementation of the provisions and policies of the County Master Plan, this title, and any other plans, program, map, or ordinance adopted or under consideration pursuant to an official notice by the county or other governmental agency having jurisdiction to guide growth and development. The proposed use in the proposed area will be adequately served by and will impose no undue burden on any of the improvements, facilities, utilities, or services provided by the county or other governmental agency having jurisdiction in the county. The special use permit conforms to the 2016 Story County Master Plan for the downtown district portion of Virginia City within the Comstock Area Plan, in which the subject property is located. A discussion supporting this finding is provided in Section 2.D of the staff report, and the contents thereof are cited in an approval of the special use permit. The condition under the special use permit do not conflict with the minimum requirements in Story County Code Section 17.03.150, special use permit, 17.12 general provisions, and 17.30 CR commercial residential. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Before I ask for a motion, I see the applicant is here. Did you have any words for us today before we move forward?
I just want to say thank you to Story County, the town of Virginia City. Everybody has been so helpful to me and my family, you know, to get this off the ground. The police department, the fire department, the building department, Kathy Canfield, and the list goes on and on. So you guys support this, and we're doing everything we can, you know, bring this thing back. So I appreciate everything that Story County and Virginia City is doing for us, for sure.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right, with that, Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'm happy to. In accordance with the recommendation by the Planning Commission and staff, the findings of fact under Section 3A of the staff report as read into the record by county staff, and in compliance with all conditions of approval, I, Commissioner Mitchell, hereby move to approve operation of a gaming establishment within an existing structure located at the southwest corner of Union and C Street. The property contains several storefronts, all internally connected in the downtown district of Virginia City. This request is to allow for gaming to occur throughout the retail establishment and will include, but isn't limited to, slot machines and table games. The property is located at 2 South C Street and 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel numbers APN 001-083-11, 12, 13, and 14.
Second that motion.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Mr. Grimes. We're going to move on to item number 18, which is discussion for possible action. Kathy? You do so well?
Yes. So this is a request for a variance to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a residence and a garage addition. This property itself has a bit of history with the county. In the 2005 to 2007 timeframe, the property owner at that time had requested a what they called at that time a land swap, but it was actually a kind of an abandonment of a portion of right-of-way to try to contain an existing what they called a carriage house on the property. And the property, the carriage house at that time had gone into the E Street right-of-way, and they did a land swap so that some of D Street became larger and part of E Street at the time became part of this property. And then by doing that, what happened is we ended up with kind of a weird shaped piece of property. And at that time, in that time frame, also to build the residence that they wanted, they requested a variance and received a variance to have a 7.5-foot setback for the house that they ended up constructing. As a part of the land swap and part of the residence variance that was there, both applications or both permits for those required that they keep the carriage house at the site. So that brings us to today. The garage itself, the applicant is wanting to tear down the existing garage that's out there and actually ask for a 2.5-foot setback from the E Street right-of-way to construct a residence addition and a garage, with the garage on the first floor and living space up above, all connected into the existing residence. They plan to use the same footprint as the existing garage that's there, and then add on the area of space would be between the house, the existing house, and the existing garage that's there today. This went to the Comstock Historic District, their May meeting, and there was a discussion about the addition that they were wanting to do. And what they found was that that garage or carriage house that was there no longer contained any aspects that made it historic. It had been redone. It actually matches the house now. It doesn't look like any old carriage house. I couldn't find any photographs of what this old carriage house was looking like, and had spoken with Kristen at the Historic District too, and she didn't have any photographs of anything. So we don't know exactly what that looked like, but we sincerely doubt that it looked like it matched the existing house that they built. Right now, if you go by there, the siding is different. There's a foundation that's there. So it doesn't look like anything that's historic that's there. And then the Historic District Commission spoke about that, and they all agreed that there wasn't anything that they had any concerns with that being torn down. So this application is asking to build this addition on the house into the footprint of that existing garage, and then utilizing, having it extend closer to the house a little bit so that it would stay at that 2.5-foot distance. We did notice adjacent property owners. We did have some letters, and there's been some correspondence from an adjacent property owner that had concerns about tearing down the garage that was there. He also had this, there was a letter that was received June 13th that had been shared with everyone, and it's on our website, with concerns about safety issues with cars in the intersection that's there where Silver Street and E Street. I looked into that and had measured some things. It does meet our requirements for the triangle distance that we have in our general provisions, has a 7-foot triangle that's there. And it does meet that by putting that garage in the existing condition, existing spot. The Comstock Historic District, as their discussion, they talked about, they didn't have any concerns with the setback. They didn't have any concerns with taking down the old garage. They did have some concerns about the design, and the applicant came back to them at their June 4th meeting and had come up with a different little design for the house, and they had accepted that. So that applicant has gone through those two meetings with discussing the project itself. The setback itself is probably more of a county issue than the historic district, but it was interesting to hear their comments on how the look of everything was. So the Planning Commission heard this at their meeting on June 6th. Although we had received some correspondence, we didn't have anybody at the actual meeting to discuss the project. And after discussing about the project and some safety of those issues, you know, the clearances, the fire hydrant, the Planning Commission, after a discussion with the applicant, quite a detailed discussion with the applicant, recommended approval 7-0. So unanimously, they were recommending approval of the project. The applicant himself, I don't believe, is here. He was unfortunately not able to attend today, but I can answer probably any questions you might have. So thank you.
Thank you for that, Kathy. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Kathy?
I have no questions. I appreciate the effort by the Planning Commission, and I look forward to supporting their approvals.
Wonderful. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Thank you, Chair. I just to start with, out of an abundance of caution, I thought that I would mention that one of my assignments is on the Historic District Commission. I was involved in the meeting, the May meeting, where there was discussion about the project and some of the concerns that were expressed. I was not present at the meeting in June where the approval was given. I don't believe that creates any sort of conflict, but I just, again, thought that I would disclose out of an abundance of caution. Kathy, do I understand correctly that, and I just want to make sure, absolutely sure, the proposal is not to extend any further closer to the right-of-way than the front of the existing garage structure?
That is correct.
Okay. But that the section that's further to the south where the house would connect directly to it would come closer from where it currently is, but not extending beyond the front of the current garage structure.
Correct. I don't know if you have your staff report easily to see, but on page 4, kind of that middle picture, it's going to be connecting where that existing garage structure is with the house. So there's an area there. They've got show like a 4x4 in there. That's where the additional area would be that they would be connecting. So that would be new structure.
Yeah, thank you. You know, in some of the correspondence there was quite a bit of discussion about parking and what's going on across the street. I'm imagining that's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're considering here today, but possibly something that we could look at either through instruction to staff to look at enforcement better or something along those lines. Is that a correct understanding?
Yes. So they're showing that they're required to have 2 on-site parking spaces, and they do have a 2-car garage that's being proposed. So that would be the 2 required spots. There is allowed parking in the right-of-way. Now, I'm not positive about the parking that's going on across the street, if all of those are registered vehicles or who those belong to. I mean, there is parking allowed in right-of-way, but I think that falls more under the sheriff's office to be policing if there's a problem with any of that parking, if it's abandoned or not registered vehicles or that type of thing. That's not something that I would get into with this kind of a application.
Got it. Thank you. And in some of the correspondence, there seemed to be an implication that that there was a plan by the applicant to change, to create a separate unit as part of this construction. Is that your understanding? Is that part of what's being considered here?
What has been presented to staff is that this is an addition to the existing residence and it will connect with the existing residence. This is not something to rent out separately or a separate unit. This is part of their home.
Very good. Thank you. I'm somewhat sympathetic because I take Flowery down and with the spite houses right there, that's a pretty blind corner. And so I'm sympathetic to the adjacent property owner's concerns about safety. I did drive over there and I looked and just looked at the positioning of the fire hydrant and the telephone pole or the power pole. And it's seemed like, while it may not be ideal, it wasn't necessarily, as long as we're not moving further into the right of way, it's not particularly dangerous. Certainly you have to be careful or cautious at that corner. One of the suggestions was conditioning it on not allowing on-street parking in front of the property. Is that a possibility? I don't know how that's something that we would enforce in a special use permit kind of a situation. Thoughts on something like that?
Well, I think anytime you have parking on the street, you do have to stay out of the traveled way. And so if this is parking that's occurring that is outside of the traveled way, unless we're going through and doing the whole parking study and deciding like it really is not appropriate, I don't know if I would want to do that for an individual item. But if they are parking and it's impeding traffic on the travel way, then there's definitely grounds for the sheriff's office to be issuing tickets or towing or anything like that. I think that's already covered under existing rules.
Yeah, thank you. It sounds like maybe outside of this particular process, we can work with the sheriff's office on some enforcement or policies around this particular area to see how we can improve safety and make sure that everyone's complying in a way that allows access for everyone and as possible. Thank you. I appreciate you indulging me with those questions.
I should also point out in the motion itself, if you so choose to move for a motion of approval, there is a finding that's added that by if this was going to be approved, that this will be superseding the previous 2000, the previous abandonment and the previous variance applications that had the requirements that the garage stay on the site. So that's something that's a little bit different than typically what we're dealing with.
Any questions, Vice Chairman?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Not seeing any. Kathy, would you like to read the findings?
Sure. Okay, so the findings of fact for a motion of approval. A variance filed 2024-013 to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a residence garage addition to an existing residence. The property is located within the CR Commercial Residential Zoning District outside of the downtown district in Virginia City. The variance request is to allow for a 2.5-foot front yard setback from the property line for the proposed residence garage addition. Property is located at 450 South East Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number APN 001-058-11. Subject property is located within the CR Commercial Residential Zoning District outside the downtown district in which single-family residents are in allowed use. That because of special circumstances applicable to the subject property, including shape, size, topography, or location of surroundings, the strict application of the zoning ordinance would deprive the subject property of privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity or under identical zone classification. That the granting of the variance is necessary for preservation and enjoyment of substantial property rights of the applicant. That the granting of the variance will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons residing or working in the area of the subject property and will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to property or improvements in the area of the subject property. The proposed variance is in compliance with all federal, Nevada, state, and Story County regulations. The proposed variance is in compliance with Story County Code 1703.140 variances and 17.12 general provisions and 17.30 CR commercial residential zone when all conditions of approval are met. The proposed variance is in compliance with and supports the goals, objectives, and policies of the 2016 Story County Master Plan. By approving the variance filed 2024-013 for the proposed residence garage addition, the Board of County Commissioners is acknowledging the past approval requirements associated with this property and is following in the Comstock Historic District Commission's direction that the existing garage structure at the northeast corner of the property that was identified to remain in previous 2005 abandonment and 2006 variance applications no longer contains any historic characteristics and can be removed. The variance file 2024-013 shall supersede any past requirements related to retaining the existing garage structure. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yes, sir. In accordance with the recommendation by the Planning Commission and staff, the findings of fact under Section 3A of this report as read into the record by county staff and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners, and in compliance with the conditions of approval, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve a variance filed 2024-013 to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a residence or garage addition to an existing residence. The property is located within the CR Commercial Residential Zoning District outside of the downtown district in Virginia City. The variance request is to allow for a 2.5-foot front yard setback from the property line for the proposed residence garage addition. The property is located at 450 South E Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number 001-058-11.
Second the motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. I know we're down towards the end of the agenda here, but we're going to need to take a quick 5-minute recess. We will see you all back here at 3:45.